Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to author G.D. Grace's A Touch of Grace, Literary Magic, on Blog Talk Radio.
You must be a special lady.
You'll be singing first, Timothy.
No, Harry, I'm singing second, man.
And a very exciting girl.
I'll bring that bass out, man.
Hey, man, I'll bring it out a little bit more.
You gotta be a special lady.
Get down on some harmony, come on.
Cause you got me sitting on top of the world. Sitting on top of the world.
Somehow I knew it would be you to change my gray skies to blue. Strange when you call my name. Ever since that day, I haven't been the same. Ooh, before I met you, my sun didn't want to shine. But all of a sudden, you snapped up from behind.
It takes me back to my high school years. We used to jam that cut over and over, as well as Happy Anniversary, which I'll be playing later on in the show. People of the world, I'm your host, GD. Welcome to Street Player Presents on A Touch of Grace. Today's date is Thursday, the 24th of April, and the time is 1:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. For 4 decades and 3 years in the entertainment business, they began their musical journey as the Moments from 1965 to 78. And then from 1978 to the present date, they have been called and known as Ray Goodman and Brown. As the Moments, the original lineup formed in Washington, D.C., and it included Mark Green, Eric Olfus Sr., Richard Gross, and John Morgan. By the time the classic tunes Baby, I Want You and Pray were recorded, the members included Olfus, Gross, and Morgan, who recorded for a then Hog Records. Mark Green joined after the single's release. The group then signed with a newly established Stang record set up by Sylvia Robinson at All Platinum Studios in Englewood, New Jersey, with her husband Joe. The group had its first hit immediately in 1968 with Not on the Outside, which reached number 13 on R&B charts and number 57 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart, with Green on lead vocals. Before leaving Platinum, the original members of The Moments scored another hit with the song Love on a Two-Way Street, which reached number 1 on the R&B charts and number 3 on the pop charts, spring of 1970. This is going to be a good show. By 1979, the group had a total of 27 R&B chart hits, leaving Stang to sign with the larger Polydor Records. After a legal dispute barring them from using the name The Moments on their new label, they were renamed using the last names of the then members of the group. Ray Goodman and Brown was born. Under the new name, the group landed another big seller with Special Lady, which reached number 1 on the R&B charts and number 5 on the pop charts in 1980, the year I graduated high school. Though this is not a conclusive list of every change and move the group has endured, it gives you a brief snapshot of how legends are born. Flash forward, they sang background vocals on Alicia Keys' hit, You Don't Know My Name, which is the number 1 soul and R&B hit in 2003. Today, the current members are Kevin Ray Owen, Billy Brown, and Larry Winfrey. And though the lineup and name of the group has changed over the years, one thing that has always remained solid and in the forefront, that is the timeless musical classic that became the soundtrack of an era that celebrated vocal excellence and perfectly executed performances on stage. It is my honor to welcome to Street Player Presents the legendary Ray Goodman and Brown. Billy, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. So how did it sound hearing that history?
Oh, it sounds pretty good. There's a couple things, Rolf. As a matter of fact, Love on a Two-Way Street, Mark Green and them, they did not do, Love on a Two-Way Street. I recorded that. At that time, Mark Green and the rest of the guys had been let go by Sylvia and Joe Robinson. They had some problems. They were only there. They recorded, I think, about three or four songs. As a matter of fact, after Not on the Outside, they were there for maybe I can't say exactly how long, but it wasn't too long after that. They had some problems, and Joe and Sylvia, the song was actually Not on the Outside was written for my group at that time, a group called which we were called the Broadways, and we had recorded for MGM Records with Koppelman and Rubin. Yeah, with Koppelman and Rubin back then. And the song, Larry Roberts saw us doing a show at the Crystal Ballroom in Harlem, and he liked the group, and so he asked, were we with anyone? At that time, we had left Koppelman and Rubin, and they said, well, we got a studio. There's a studio over in Englewood in which Sylvia Robinson, he said, Sylvia, you know the song Love is Strange. I said, yeah. He says, well, she and her husband, Joe Robinson, have a studio over there. And, why don't you come over? They probably like your group. You know, you can probably be able to do something over there. So we did. We went up there and we sang. Come to find out, Sylvia didn't particularly care for the group, but she liked me. And we couldn't get back then, things were tight, couple of guys that was in the group, Leon Trent. He had a transportation, but he was working, so we couldn't get up there to rehearse. And first thing I know, I was working for Ford Motor Company, and I just happened to be taking a bath this particular day, and I turned on the radio to WABC here in New York, which was the station at that time, and I heard him say, "With the number 25 song." And I count down the moments with them, not on the outside. Oh, man, you talking about somebody who was livid. I jumped out. I said, these guys have messed up my opportunity. You know, I want to sing with something that I always wanted to do. And would you little that you would, you know, as fate would have it or as God would have it, I like to say. Not long after that, Larry Roberts came to Asbury Park looking for me. And he went to this club that I used to frequent called Big Bill's in Asbury Park, New Jersey. And so when I walked in, the bartender at that time was a guy named Richard Hatchett. He says, "Billy, this guy just left here. He told me to tell you to stay here if you came." And so I said, "Oh, Larry Roberts, he probably got a song that he wants me to do." So I left. I left and I went to this little place called Long Branch where Harry Ray was from. I went to Long Branch, and I stayed there for a couple of hours and then came back. And he said, "Billy," when I walked back in, "Billy, he just left. He told me to wait. He told me to tell you to wait here." So I said, "Okay." Well, when Larry walked in again, I was dancing with my girlfriend at that time. And so he says, come in. So I said, "After the record, you know." So after the record, he came over. He says, "Look," he said, "Joe and Sylvia sent me down here to get you." I said, he said, "They want you to be the lead singer for the moment. They said the song was written for you, so that's why they sent me to get you, you know." So I said, "Yeah, Larry." I thought it was, Larry, you had to know Larry. You had to know Larry Roberts at that time. God bless his soul. But I'm saying, "Okay, yeah, sure, Larry." And then he says, "I just left your sister's house." He said, "Look, I'll come by and I'm going to pick you up. I told your sister already. I'm going to pick you up in the morning at 9 o'clock. Because Joe and them want to talk with you up in Inglewood." I said, "Yeah, okay, Larry." Well, Larry dropped me off at my house. And the next morning, when he came, I was still in the bed. And my sister knocked on my door and said, and my sister knocked on my bedroom door and said, "Billy, Larry's waiting for you." I said, Larry's here for you. I said, "Oh, my goodness." I said, "Okay." All right, I got up. That's when it kind of dawned on me a little bit, you know. I said, "Well, maybe he's serious," you know. So I got up, took a shower, and went up there, and I met with Joe and Sylvia. And so Joe, he said, "Well, I hear you got a good job." I said, "Yeah." I said, "I'm working with Ford Motor Company. Back then, you know, I'm bringing home, you know, $600-$700 a week." So he says, "Well, how would you like to double or triple that?" So I said, "Oh, that'd be beautiful." So he says, "Well, okay, we want you to be the new lead singer for the moment. That's why we came at you." So I said, I called my job. I had to leave my job, and that was it. And then there was myself, Al Goodman, and we kept one of the guys from the old group, John Morgan. They had John. We rehearsed this was on a Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken. This was on a Tuesday, and we had a show. Our first show was going to be that Friday in Baltimore, Maryland, at the Civic Center. Now, the Civic Center, you got to understand, the Civic Center was held 11,000, 12,000 people. You know,
wow.
So I'm saying, "Oh, goodness." They said, "Okay." You know, I had sang in front of a crowd before, but nothing like that. And it just so happened that the day that that Friday, our song, Not on the Outside, had went to number one in Baltimore. And I said, "Oh." And so when the DJ, his name was Hot Rod, when he introduced us, he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, with the number one song in Baltimore, Not on the Outside," the moment they screamed so loud, I'm telling you, that when I was walking out, my knees actually buckled a little. You know, and I'm saying, and I looked out and I saw all these people. I said, "Oh, my goodness." you know. And we sang, all we did was sing that one song, and that was it, you know. And got paid, and got back then, got paid real good for doing one song. And I guess the rest, as you could say, is history. After Johnny Moore came Sylvia's brother-in-law, Johnny Morgan, and he got Joe Robinson, who was Sylvia's husband. He fired Johnny Moore, and we went looking for Harry Ray. As a matter of fact, Al and I, we were doing the Sam and Dave kind of thing, you know, while looking for a third member. Joe fired us the same day that we were going. He fired Johnny Moore. We were going to that afternoon. We were going to St. Louis to work at the Keel Auditorium with all these other acts, Freda Payne and I think the Impressions, and everybody was on. It was a big show. And he fired, and we said, "Well, Joe, can't you wait until so we do the show and then fire him?" He said, "No." He said, "You guys are professionals, right?" So I said, "We both said, yeah." He said, "Well, you go out there, and Al, you stand on one side of the stage. Billy, you take the other, and you come out with the biggest song that you have." And that was Love on 2-Way Street, which was number one in St. Louis at that time as well. And people act like there was no, you know, they didn't miss anybody, you know, so. You know, we worked like that for a while. And then, yeah, it was something, the way things transpired with the group through the years, you know.
It's a legacy that you have. And like I mentioned with High Five, who was on a couple of weeks ago, they lost their lead singer, Tony Thompson. I believe that the heart of a group, a real group, is the spirit and the meaningful song. So... Mm-hmm. How challenging was it for you to step into a group that already had been formed?
Well, you know, really, it wasn't that hard because remember what not for me, because I knew the song. I wasn't really looking at that. They had did the song before me, but see, Mark Green did the 45 on the song. He sang the 45, but if you listen to the album, the first album, Not on the Outside but Inside Strong, I did the lead. That's my lead on Not on the Outside on the album. So actually, he sang. One song that was released, and he did a song called A Lover's Prayer, which, they recorded it at the same time as they recorded Not on the Outside, but it was just a little regional thing, you know, and that was the only song Green sang as the moment. Everything after Not on the Outside, like Sunday, Somebody Loves You Baby, all that kind of, all those songs, I did the lead on all of that, you know, from then on. Well, after Not on the Outside, I did everything, all the lead up until the time I started having problems with my throat, and Harry Ray was in the group, and he did If I Didn't Care. We were recording that, and I couldn't do it. The only part that I sang on If I Didn't Care was the end, that for you, and I did that, and that was it. That was go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay, you're doing fantastic, I love it. First of all, thank you so much for clearing up the haziness. I pulled a lot of the information from Wikipedia, so you can't believe everything you read, and this is what I love about this platform. You know, I love this platform because it allows the artist to actually, in their own words, tell the history of the group, and for that, I am just thoroughly honored to have you on. And so, I didn't care... Oh, you're welcome. If I Didn't Care reminded me of Fred Sanford. because there was an episode where he sang If I Didn't Care. So you guys have had a lot of great music, and through the trials and the tribulations, the different members in and out, you guys have just done fantastic. So I want to go back to that Baltimore Civic Center performance. So
right.
Would you say that in front of 11,000 people, that's when it cemented for you that you were born for this?
You know, I honestly believe it. I believe that helped to solidify that. I've always known what I had wanted to do in my life. I started singing at the age of four. I was in my father was a minister, and I was in my father's choir when I was 4 years old. So singing was something that I've always known, and I've always did from my mother and my father. Both sang. My father was a fantastic singer. All my brothers, I have three brothers and two sisters, and they all sing, but I'm the only one I think that I know that pursued it as a career. It's something that I love to do. I love to sing, and by the grace of God, I've been able to do it now I've been doing it professionally now for 46 years. So, I just thank God each and every day for the blessing.
So you definitely came from a talented family, and so there's a question that I ask because you sound so vibrant. So for one who has been performing for decades, how do you keep the magic going? Do you ever get tired of singing the same old song?
Do you know what? I think it's your audience, your fans and stuff. When you perform, you might not feel like performing, but they get you revved up. They get you excited because they want to see you. They want to see you, and they want to see you perform. They start singing the songs as you sing them. And so you look out there and you see them singing right along with you. I think that just gives you a great feeling. But most of all, I think when this is something that you really want to do, when you're doing something that is your dream, I don't think you ever get tired. Like even now, I don't get tired. Sometimes I get a little frustrated about things, but there's been peaks and there's been valleys, but by the grace of God, there's been more peaks than valleys. So I'm very blessed, and I'm very thankful for all of that. You know, in my life, I think in anyone's life, if you just put God first in what you do, and give Him the grace, give Him the praise and the glory for what you've done, I think it makes things so much better in your life. You know, I had to learn these things through the year. I mean, not that I've always had my faith, but then later on, as you get older, you start to really, really look at where it all came from, you know. And I guess I attribute that to my father, and I attribute it to my mother as well. They raised me to be a good person. First, to be a good person and a caring person, and I've always tried to live up to that standard. You know,
it's funny when you mentioned WABC in Washington, D.C., and where you were when you heard your record on the radio.
This was in Asbury Park, New Jersey. I'm sorry. That was WABC was Asbury Park, New Jersey. Well, I was living in Asbury Park, New Jersey, but it was a New York station.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
that was a New York station, WABC, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Back then, you know, we didn't have the luxury of social media that you could follow
right.
and find out what's going on. So a lot has changed in the music industry. So I want to talk a little bit about your thoughts on the state of the R&B today. But before we get into that, the Alicia Keys collaboration, how did that come together, and what was it like working with her?
Well, that came together, a friend of ours, I don't know, you're probably familiar with, Chuck Jackson. Chuck Jackson was Any Day Now. Any Day Now, yeah. They were looking for someone. Alicia was looking for someone to do the background part. So she said she had tried everybody. Had told Chuck she had tried everybody, and no one could seem to do it. So she said, Chuck told her, so, well, you haven't tried the right group yet. So she said, who do you mean? She said, he told her, said, Ray Goodman and Brown. She said, well, I love them. Can you get them? So he said, yeah. He says, all right, let me call them. And we were on our way to Washington, D.C. And and Chuck called. It was on a Saturday. And Chuck called us while we were on the road. And he says, look, Alicia wants somebody to do background on You Don't Know My Name. He says, would you guys be able to do it? He said, well, if we can come in next week. He told him we were on our way to Washington, D.C. at Constitution Hall. So we said, well, let me call and make the arrangement, call you back. Well, he didn't call us back that day. And then Sunday he didn't call. Monday he didn't call. And then Tuesday, he called down and said, well, she wants you guys to come down to the studio down in downtown New York. So we said, okay. So we went down there and we met her and everything. And she was saying, well, this is what you got to do. This is what I want you to do. And so she said, she gave it to us and everything, and on the tape recorder and all. And so she left. And so she stayed away for, I guess, about 2 hours, 2.5 hours. So when she came back in, we were there sitting down. We got it in about, it took us about a half an hour to get it. And so, so when she came back, she looked, she says, she looked at us and she says, well, I guess you guys couldn't get it, huh? So we said, no, we got it. We're trying to. She said, what? She said, I'm really shocked. We got it. And we did it, and she was knocked out. I'll tell you one thing about her, Alicia, she is one of the sweetest people that you ever want to meet. As nice as you might think she is by seeing her in her interviews and different things like that, it doesn't even compare to the real her, like being around her. She's a very spiritual young lady, just as humble as she can be. One thing I like about her, we would get in a circle and we would pray, you know. And that just showed me just what she was about, you know. She's just a lovely person. I still do. I call her Ray Goodman and Brown's angel. I call her my angel. Yeah, because at that time, you know, things were kind of a little bit slow for us at that time. And then she came along. And, you know, whether people want to believe it or not, but God, if you believe, God puts people in place for you that you wouldn't even dream of. Now, we never even thought that we would be doing something like that with Alicia. We traveled everywhere with her. We did all of the major TV shows and all those things with her. We did a lot of live unplugged. If you look on her, look up Alicia Keys, Unplugged. We did so many things with her, and I hate to say hell of a woman, but she's just a great woman. She's a great young lady, and I'll be forever grateful to her.
Well, one thing I can certainly say when you're talking about Alicia Keys, you know, I think of Jill Scott, Erykah Badu, Maxwell, Erykah, these people, entertainers mm-hmm. that are out there keeping R&B very much alive. And before we get into the state of R&B today, because I'd really like to know your thoughts, the pitfalls of the business, you know, we saw that we lost Michael Jackson and Whitney Houston and so many mm-hmm. other great stars to the pitfalls of this business. So how did you, Billy, avoid those pitfalls and make it through?
You know, I didn't avoid them. I avoided a lot of them.
Uh-huh.
Most of them I avoided. But you see, what like I said, you must remember, I was a country boy. I'm from Georgia originally, you know. I lived in the country even when I came up here, I lived in the country. I didn't know anything about drugs. I never, you know, anything, nothing uh-huh. like that. You know, I was a church goer. You know, my father was a minister. I was, my parents never let that get into our life. You know,
uh-huh.
my mother nor my father drank. You know, my brothers and sisters didn't drink. I had relatives that drank. I didn't really drink until I was like 21 years old. You know, uh-huh. I mean, I've had it. No, don't get me wrong. I tried it, but uh-huh. it was something that I didn't like. I tried smoking, you know, reefer, and that was something that I really didn't like because I didn't feel in control of myself.
Right.
Then, this will happen. I always tell, when I did TBN and all of, and shows like that, I always tell them that a fast woman and a toothpaste got me hooked, so to speak. We were in Detroit, Michigan, working at a club called the Mozambique, and this was Thanksgiving Eve, and it was a nice club. We went there to work, and then while we were on stage, these two ladies walked in with mink coats and mink hat and all the diamonds sparkling, and each one of them had a magnum of champagne and all that. And I'm on stage, and this young lady, she just kept looking at me and making googly eyes, that kind of thing. So after we got off. After we got off stage, I go back to the dressing room, get dressed. Somebody, that waitress knocks on the door and says, "Billy, would you, someone would like for you to have a drink with them." So I said, oh okay. I kind of knew who it was. So I went and had a drink and sat down there. So they said, she said, "What are you doing later?" Blah, blah, blah. Nothing. I'm not doing anything. And I had a slight toothache that was starting to bother me. So she gave me a ride back to the hotel. So she said, "What are you guys doing tomorrow?" Because tomorrow's Thanksgiving. She says, "Well, why don't you come up to, my place, you know, or I'll send cars over to pick you guys up. All the guys are welcome to come, your band, everybody, you know, you want." So I said, okay. So I asked them, they said, okay. So she sent over the cars the next day and everything, and I still had this toothache that was bothering me. She said, "Well, maybe I can call my, you know," and I'm saying, to come in on Thanksgiving, you know. So, I'm thinking. So she made a call, and he was out of town. So the next day, she came over. She sent the cars over. We went up to her apartment. She had the penthouse apartment in the building, and that overlooked the river there and right into Canada. So we said, "Boy, I'm looking." When we got there, you know, the carpet on our floor must have been like 3 inches thick, and floor
wow.
to ceiling windows and all that, all the way around, a panoramic view, everything. And I'm saying, "Boy," so. I told her, she asked me, she said, "How's your tooth?" I said, my tooth is killing me, you know? So she says, "Well, look," she said, "there's some cocaine back there." I said, "Oh, no. I said, I don't do that." So I told my partner at that time, who was Harry Ray, you know, I uh-huh. said, "Hey, man," I said, "this girl, she just offered me some cocaine," and blah, blah, blah. Harry said, where? You know? in the bedroom, you know? So he said, "Come on." I went back there with him, and it was on like this little mirror, like shaped like a round, like an ashtray, but it had a mirror on top, and it had the cocaine on there. And so Harry did what he was going. He said, "I said, man," he said, "all you got to do, Billy, is you know, kind of wet your finger and dip, put it in there, and he said, and rub it on your gum where it hurts. I said, no, man. I said, I don't want to get hooked on that. He said, oh, man, yeah, you're not going to get it hooked. He said, that's nothing, man. I said, you'll be okay. So I said, I'm looking at it, and it was, my tooth was killing me. So I said, are you sure, man? He said, you sure? He said, no, man, you ain't going to get hooked by doing that, you know? So I said, okay. I'll wet my finger and put it in there and rubbed it on where it was hurting and, you know, give it 30, 35 seconds or so. Boy, the pain started to subside. I felt good, too. You know, uh-huh. I said, oh, man, you know. So when it started to bother me anymore, no one had to tell me to go back there and do it again. And that was a start. That was a start of my, it wasn't my demise. I think by the grace of God, but it was, wow. That was my experience with drugs. I did that for a good while, but I, you know, for a long time. And then in 1985, you know, after I missed gigs and that kind of stuff.
Right,
you know,
right.
I was out with, you know, I was on the Freddie Jackson. I was on the, we were doing the Freddie Jackson tour and all that back then. And, you know, you're making food gobs of money and that kind of thing. And, you know, you're able to do the things that you want to do. And I was so sociable. Everybody used to like to see me coming. You know, they used to love to see me coming because I was so sociable. I wanted everybody to have fun, you know, and it was nothing for me to have, you know, I'd go by the office and pick up my end of money sometimes, you know, $4,000, $5,000, you know, and my wife was getting her money, luckily, you know, because a lot of times during that time, I would go by and pick up my money. My wife wouldn't see me until it was time for me to go back out again, you know. Mm-hmm. And I would, there's nothing for me to spend, you know, spend all that money and spend that little bit of time and go back out on the road again, you know. You know, I look back on it and I'm really, you know, I'm upset about it, but I really can't get upset because it's something that I did. And I know that, and God had a plan, you know. I tell everyone, I've been at hell's door, opened the door, stuck my head and my foot inside, and God just grabbed me and pulled me back and said, oh, no, not you. I'm only going to let you go but so far. And that's what he did. And, you know, and I quit in 1985, and from that day till this one. It was like when I walked through those doors, I knew that I would never do it again. God had told me that I would never do it again. And from that day till this one, it's like I never did it before. I don't have an inkling to do it. It's been all around me, and I don't even have – I don't know. God just took it away. God just took it all away. You know?
Your higher power.
And I'm so happy. I'm so happy for that. Yeah.
It's almost like Rick James said, may he rest in peace. He was – a fantastic performer, but he did say cocaine is a hell of a drug, and I've had my bouts with it as well, too, and like you said, walking through the doors of a hospital, you know when you've had enough, and we are so lucky that you are still with us, making so much good music and still touching people on stage. So when we're talking about life in the industry these days, what are your thoughts about the R&B industry today?
Well, I hate to say that. I have respect for guys that are making the music, a lot of the music today, you know, it's not really it's good, I guess, for what they want out of music, but all of the orchestration and everything has been taken out of the music, the things that make music, you know, the horns and the strings and, you know, not being played by a keyboard, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. I find that somewhat upsetting, although some of it is good. Although some of it is good, it's just mm-hmm. not for me. I don't want to knock anyone for what they're doing, but no matter to do whatever it is you're doing. It takes a certain amount of talent to do that. But I just feel as though all of that's been taken out. And another thing with the young artists, all they want to do is riff. All they want to, how many times can I say right. can I riff is before I can say the. You know what I'm
exactly.
saying? It's always it's never saying a melody straight, just a straight pretty melody. You know, it's nothing like that. Everybody wants to see how I can riff. How can I riff this word? Riffing is okay in its place.
Right.
But all the way through a song on just about every other word, you know, come on now. You know, let's you know, it's good. If you can do it, fine. You know, but it's good in its place, but not just through, do a whole song of I'm going to riff this word, I'm going to riff this verse all the way. Oh, my God. It just gets, everybody sounds the same. You know, if you hear one voice, it's not like when we started. There were a lot of groups like us. There were a lot of three-man and four-man groups. But they all had that. You could sit and say, "Oh, that's so and so. That's the Delphonics.
Right.
Oh, that's the Moments." You know? Oh yeah. You know, you could tell with these groups. Oh, that's, you know, that's the Impressions or whoever, man. You know, because mm-hmm. everybody's sound was distinct. You know,
mm-hmm.
everybody wasn't. No one sang alike. They might have had falsetto singers, but they didn't sound alike, you know, and that's the only. That's what I find with me and the music today. I mean, all well and good. I'm glad to see that, you know, I guess R&B. You call it R&B.
Right.
I'm glad to see that, you know, that they're trying to keep it alive, but groups like us, we're almost like dinosaurs. There's not too many of us left.
Oh, you're,
you know,
the
we're
jewels.
Almost, we're,
you're the jewels of the industry. And anytime you see, and I didn't mean anything, anytime you see an award show on BET or Centric or TV One, when the older artists that have been in the business for a while get on stage and the camera scans the audience, you see all of the happy faces. So we're talking about the Charlie
yeah.
Wilson, the Earth, Wind, and Fires, Smokey
oh,
Robinson
yeah.
and the Miracles, you know, and, of
absolutely.
Course, the Moments and Ray Goodman and Brown. You are
mm-hmm,
gems
mm-hmm.
to the industry. So what I want to do, if you have a moment, I want to play Happy mm-hmm. Anniversaries for the listeners today. Can you hang around for the last part of the interview?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and set. Can you set Happy Anniversary up for us, who wrote it, and who were the singers that were singing on this particular one?
Okay. Happy Anniversary was actually written by myself, Al Goodman, Harry Ray, and Walter Morris. Walter Morris was our guitar player, all of whom since have passed. And this song was written. It started out as a Christmas song. And we changed
really?
It to an anniversary. Yeah, actually, yeah. And we changed it to an anniversary song. Yeah. And we went in the studio, and this is what came of it.
All right, thanks a lot, Billy. So let's kick back for a minute. We're going to listen to "Happy Anniversary" by Ray Goodman and Brown.
She likes you. Yeah. Yeah. She likes you.
Let's work on a new song.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anniversary thing?
Yeah, yeah, man. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. That sounds good.
What's
I got the second tenor. I got the top.
Oh, you got the top, Bill?
Yeah.
I'll take the bass, all right?
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's move the top.
Hey, man, that sure does sound good.
Oh, I like
you. Yeah, I like
that, buddy.
Billy really sounds good, man.
Hey, man,
you
too,
Harry.
Hey, man, what about the bass, man?
The bass, man.
Always. Okay, I'll tell you what then. Let's do it again.
One more time.
All right, let's
do it. Still
on kick. All right, come on. Another year has come and gone, and we're still together here with a love so very strong.
So while we're celebrating like this, we'll take a toast to the year. Cause if anyone deserves to stay together out of bill, we should be one. Happy anniversary, my dear. Happy anniversary.
Than the woman who acts enough, and in you I can depend to be the one to hold the strength. Now that's the way you've always been.
So while we are celebrating like this, I'll drink a toast to you, my dear. Cause I made my resolution. This is my own constitution. To love you more and more each day. Ooh, happy anniversary.
Down, Bill Brown.
My dear.
Well, Harry, sure sounds good today.
I like this.
Happy anniversary.
Oh, thanks, Harry.
Good to you.
This song's so good. It makes me all down.
Okay, for those who tuned in today, you just heard Billy Brown, the Brown and the Ray Goodman and Brown, singing lead, lead on the song Happy Anniversary. It puts tears in my eyes, Billy. What a loud
person.
Well, it does. It puts tears in my eyes, especially when you hit that high note. So while we're celebrating like this, we'll drink a toast to the years to come. I'm tearing up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you.
And oh,
so
wow.
I really am. You are, groups like Ray Cabin and Brown are a gem to the industry. And so what do you think, you're welcome. What do you think allows certain music to defy a time period?
I think songs just like that, Love on a Two-Way Street, songs like Look at Me, I'm in Love, gosh, man, just all, most of the, like the songs that you, the songs that we've done, you know, they have meaning. When we were writing, we would always write songs like and lyrics to say what a man would want to say to his wife or his girlfriend, you know. Very, very clean lyrics. On one song, people used to get it twisted because it says inside of you, you know. Mm-hmm. You and I are as close as 2 is to 3, and it's growing closer together. We found that magic seed. We found that magic seed.
Wow.
And love. Mm-hmm. And it's like I love you so much that the only way that I could be any more in love or any closer to you is to be inside of you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it's not being suggested like sexually. The only way that I could be any closer or feel any closer or to you would I'd have to be inside of you. That's the only way, you know. And you know, lyrics like that, you know. Harry Ray did a lot of the writing, and Harry, special lady. It's the lyrics. If you listen to the lyrics are very, very clever. Harry was a very clever writer. You know, he used different like little cliches that we use, like. If you listen to like Special Lady, Pop Goes the Weasel, you know, In My Mind, you know, things like that. He would use these things and put them into songs, you know. And we had a song that wasn't big in the States, but it was a silver disc horse in Europe, called Jack in the Box. And the lyrics were like, "Oh, a jack comes out of the box. The bears came home and caught Goldilocks. His horn belongs to Little Boy Blue, and it's a fact, oh, a natural fact. Yeah, it's a natural fact that I'm in love with you." And that's the way he wrote, you know.
Oh.
He wrote. He was very clever in his lyrics. He was a great singer. Had a great voice. And I knew Harry. I'm the one that kept Harry from going. From going to California. He was going the next day, and I happened to be in Long Branch the day before, and I saw him. He looked at me, he said, "Billy Brown." He said, "Hey, man, how you doing, blah, blah, blah." He said, "Man, you sure look good." He said, I said, "Thank you, man." He said, "I'm getting ready to go to California. I'm leaving tomorrow. Me and my group are going out there to see if we can get a break." So I said, "Well, before you go all the way out there," I said, "why don't you go up to the studio and with Joe and Sylvia and see if they can do something for you?" He said, "You think they would?" I said, "Yeah." And that's how Harry got in. The day that he came, I wasn't there at that time. And Al saw him. And so when I got there, Al said, "Man," he said, "Billy," he said, "this group came up here today. This guy, who is that tall, light skinned guy with the big afro?" I said, "Oh, you mean Harry?" He said, "Yeah, man." He said, "Billy, he was fit." So that night we went down to Long Branch looking for him and couldn't find him. And so. We left word at his mom's house, and then we went to his girlfriend's house. He wasn't there. And we just left word with his mom to tell him to call us the next day. So he called up then. Joe and him asked him to come up to the studio. He came up to the studio, and Joe said, "Look, man," he says, "look, the guys are looking for a third guy." He said, "Oh, I couldn't leave my guys. You know, we've been together for so long. You know, and back then, you know, when you're not working, and this, you don't have any money, when a person goes in his pocket and say, 'Well, look, I was prepared to give you here's $500 right now,' and pull out $500 bills to give to him." He said, he said, "Maybe I could you do something for them?" He said, "I promise you, Harry, I'll try to do something for the guys, but we need you." He went out there and told his group that he was joining us. And that's how Harry got into with Ray Goodman and Brown. Yeah,
that's it.
So what I'd like to do,
God, I could just sit and listen to you for hours. I have some callers. Would you like to talk to a couple of your fans?
I sure will. Sure.
All right, here, let me go ahead. I think I know who this is already. Okay, Aunt Bev, you're on 989-739. You are on with one of the legends, Billy Brown of Ray Goodman and Brown. Do you have a question for Mr. Brown? Okay. All right, I'm not sure where she is. Let's go ahead and try to take another one. Now, this caller is from an unknown number. You are on with GD and also the third of Ray Goodman and Brown, Mr. Billy Brown. Do you have a question this afternoon?
Hi. No, I don't have a question. This is Ms. Sugar. I was just listening in.
Okay, Ms. Sugar. Well, I want to thank you so much for supporting the show, and I'm going to go ahead and put you back on hold, and we're going to go ahead and finish up this interview. But thanks for tuning in today.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, she's one of the Blog Talk Radio colleagues over. Her name's Ms. Sugar. Very sweet young woman. So let's very sweet young lady. When you look out into the audience, what is the racial content during this
racial?
Time?
What's the racial content?
Yeah,
the audience?
Is it all black or is it a mixture of all?
It's
colors?
A mixture. Most of our shows are a mixture of black, white, and a lot of Hispanic, especially when we perform in California. We get when we perform out there, we do. We usually work with a company called Pacific Coast Contracts, Alan Beck. And when we perform there for him, if you look out in the audience, you might see we usually work, 15,000 seaters and that kind of stuff, 10,000 seats. And you look out in the audience, you'd see mostly Hispanic because they love this music. They say that today's music is not music. He says they'll tell you that the lowriders, they'll tell you that this is the music that we like. And you'd be surprised that their mothers and fathers, but the children, I'm talking about like 15, 16 years old, they love it. They love it. They say, we don't want to hear no rap. We don't want to hear rap. We don't want to hear no rap. We want real music. This is the music that we were raised on that was played in our home, in our homes. And I couldn't believe it. I was so, I was so taken aback. I said, well, I'll be doggone. And they know all of your music. It's just, wow, man. It's just really something. It is.
So there's hope for this generation. There's hope for this generation. Yeah, when you guys make it to California, especially Northern California, where I'm located, I'm going to catch a concert. I actually saw you guys years ago, and I don't know if you remember this one, Billy. It was Circle Star Theater in San Carlos, California. I saw you guys. See, I'm dating myself, but I remember the concert that you guys did.
I used to love working there. I used to love the Circle Star Theater. Yes, man.
Yeah. I was talking to Howard Hewitt a couple of months ago, and he remembered. He just kind of got a chuckle. So, what you're doing in music today, as you said, 15, 16-year-olds, this music will never go out of date because it has so much emotion and feeling behind it. And, now I know spirituality, a love for God. So where is Ray Goodman and Brown touring these days?
Well, we're touring. We're touring all over. We just left Las Vegas. We were out there at the Thomas and Mack Center at UNLV. We were just there, and then we came back, and we worked right in Neptune, New Jersey last weekend. We're on our way to Washington, D.C., this weekend, and then we're off for a week, and then we're in Chicago the following week. By the grace of God, we're working, we're doing a lot of things, as a matter of fact, we have a Kevin Owens. I don't know if for the public to enlighten them. Kevin Owens was the only male background singer with Luther Vandross. He was with them, with Luther for 23 years. the tall bald
head
guy.
I remember him.
Yeah. Well, he's with us now. He started with us, and then when Harry Ray came back to the group, Luther wanted Kevin. So Kevin, we told him with your blessing, but you would always, no matter what, you would always have a place in Ray Goodman and Brown. So when Harry Ray passed, Kevin came back. And he's written a book called So Amazing, So Amazing, My 23 Years with Luther Vandross and Ray Goodman Brown. It's also going to be a stage play as well. We start rehearsal in June. So there's a lot of things that's going on for Ray Goodman and Brown. Plus we have a new single that's going to be a little different for us, but it's going to be a lot of fun. Fans are going to, I think they're going to really, really like this, because it's done so well, you know.
And what is the name of the new single, Billy?
Well, the new single is I Want to Dance.
Okay.
I Want to Dance. It's something that's up tempo for us. But you're going. You're not going. When you hear it, if they don't tell you who it is, you won't know it's us.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of fun to do. It was a lot of fun to do, and the song is put together so well. You know, it's not just a happy song. It's a happy song. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a lot of irons in the fire.
When is it going to be released?
We're hoping within the next couple months.
Okay.
That's what we're looking forward to. But now that I have your information and everything, I'll call you and I'll let you know personally.
Okay, do that. And you are definitely welcome back to the show anytime. And if you want to discuss So Amazing, the book, if Kevin wants to discuss that, definitely get in touch with me. I know that Yvette Brown actually made this interview possible with Ray Goodman Brown. So I really thank her. And so for the final thoughts for today, who do we call if we want to book the Legends Ray Goodman and Brown?
Well, you can call me direct. That's what most of the booking is being done to direct. And the number you can call is area code 908-463-4405.
All right. Thank you so much. And I want you, on behalf of A Touch of Grace, to thank Kevin, Ray Owens, as well as Larry Winfrey, and yourself for giving us good music, because we love you guys so much. And you're definitely welcome back here on the show anytime.
Right.
And are there any final thoughts that you'd like to leave your fans?
I sure would. And what I'd like to say to them is I must say that I really, really appreciate all of the love and all the support that you've given us through the years, for all these 46 years that we've been doing this professionally. And we've always tried to take time, and we always will take time to address whatever it is that you want. If you see us, we're very approachable. You can come to us and ask us or talk with us. We'll take time with you to say hello and that type of thing. Sometimes we might be a little busy and we might have to cut it kind of short, but we're very approachable. I just want to say that, you know. And I want to say God bless each and every one of you, and may God just embellish your life with all of the good and wonderful things that He has to bring. And Kevin would have been on with me today, but what happened was that he's doing a book signing today as well. But maybe next time, you know, we'll have him on as well, or I'll tell him to give you a call, and maybe you can set something up, or have Yvette give you a call, and you can set something up with him.
Okay, that sounds great. I am here.
Okay.
For the encouragement and the support. I think that you guys are incredible, and I welcome you back to the show, and I most certainly wish you God's love and all the success in the world that this life has to offer. So I'm going to go ahead and let you get back to what you were doing this afternoon. But thanks for stopping by Touch of Grace today.
And thank you so very much, and God bless you as well, you and yours.
All right. Thank you, Billy. You take care.
Okay, you too.
All right. Okay, everyone.
Bye.
Goodbye. We just got through interviewing. Well, I just got through interviewing the Brown of Ray Goodman and Brown, the legendary falsettos. I played Happy Anniversary in the middle, and let me just tell you right now, those songs still bring or make the hairs on the back of my neck stand up because they are just that beautiful. So before we leave today, I want to go ahead and announce some upcoming shows and leave you with a final thought. Tomorrow on Friday the 25th, there are no shows scheduled as my family pays homage to our beloved great Aunt Althea, who moved on to her heavenly home on Good Friday last week. On the 26th, it's Saturday, my childhood friend and colleague, Bonnie Mashak, joins A Touch of Grace to discuss her enchanting, recently released first new novel. It's called The Dreams of Maddie Fitch. So I'm excited about that one. Then on Sunday the 27th, an 18-year-old music composer and entertainer, Devontae Riley, stops by Street Player here on A Touch of Grace to discuss his hot new single, On My Mind, and the upcoming EP, Restricted Limits. And I want to thank Dion Vincent, comedian in Beverly Hills, for making that one possible. And then on Tuesday the 29th, another legend, the great Chris Jasper from the Grammy-winning Isley Brothers, joins me on Street Player to discuss his legendary life in the spotlight. And that is made possible by Wayne Barrows over at World Media. And this is some final thoughts that I'd like to leave you with today. Though the years pass ever so swiftly, one thing that remains constant, that's love. Love of self, love of our loved ones, and love for this incredible life. Each day we live, we are creating memories that will linger on long after our presence here is gone. When we make them, let's make them be memorable. For at the final call, there should be memories of laughter and smiles and the joy that comes only from living. And remember this, GD loves you very much. Make sure you're loving yourself, okay? Thanks for tuning in, making us 40,000 strong, and we're just going to keep on going. Have a wonderful afternoon.